Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 214th edition of New Mainers Speak. My guest today is Mohammed Ibrahim. He was born and raised in Djibouti, a country of almost a million people nestled between Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somalia on the Horn of Africa. As an adult, Mohammed moved to Qatar, where he worked for 14 years before moving to Maine in 2012. He's now married, lives in Lewiston, and is a community organizer for Maine People's Alliance. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Mohammed.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me.
As a boy, growing up, the eldest of three boys, I wonder what kinds of things you did for fun.
Yes, so this is a very long time ago, and I was born in Obok, a small city in the northern part of Djibouti, and moved around the country because my father was in the military, and we kept moving from different city to city.
So what did you do for fun when you were moving? You have a couple close brothers?
Yeah, we were three brothers, and soccer was the main game for our free times as children. We also had a very good opportunity to be, to know the country's landscapes and, mountains and rivers, and learn geographically the country that we lived.
You live in such a beautiful country.
Yeah.
It's visually stunning.
Yeah, it is.
I spent a long time last night, looking through pictures of Djibouti, and I wondered if you spent any time at Lake Assal, the saltiest water body in the world.
Yes, it's the saltiest water body in the world, and also the lowest point in the whole continent.
It's below sea level?
Below sea level.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
So do people swim in there? I mean, it's salty. It looks like it's got a rind of salt.
Yeah, and it produces a lot of salt very, very constantly. But I never been there. We studied in school. We have seen people who went there.
Oh, okay.
And it's far away in the north. The northern part of the country is close to near the biggest forest we have. What they call it? Day. Die.
Oh, yes, D-A-Y. D-A-Y.
Yeah, D-A-Y.
I saw that in the national park.
There. Yeah, a big national park.
So beautiful. When you think back to your boyhood, what do you miss from Djibouti life?
Djibouti took its independence in 1977. So when I'm talking about my childhood, I'm talking about the 80s and early 90s. And it was really quiet. People were... the independence feeling was still alive and fresh, and people were bound together because of the independence and were enjoying their sovereignty.
A lot was possible, probably a real freeing feeling.
A lot of potentials and hope were there.
No longer colonialized.
No longer colonized
by
France. No, right, yeah. So it was kind of moving together in a new way, a new identity, new sovereignty and freedom together. It was like kind of very joyful, and it could be felt in there.
And so when you think back to Djibouti, you think of the joy that was in the people when they had a lot of potential.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the schools in Djibouti when you were growing up? What was the education like, the quality?
The education back then was very high quality education, and it was linked to the French curriculum. Having a Djibouti high school was equivalent or equal to having a French high school certificate. And then we didn't have universities at that time, and people from high schools were directly going to French universities. And it was really, teachers were well trained, and it was really high, and very good quality. People at the sixth grade were able to speak fluently French
and
Somali and Afar,
yeah,
and Arab
and Arabic
and Arabic,
yeah. Wow, polyglots galore.
Yeah, right.
Both of your parents had died by the time you were 16 and you had to leave school. How did you help support your family? What kind of work did you gravitate toward?
I worked in the private sector and was a salesperson at a cosmetic shop for few years before I moved to Qatar. So I was in the business and also managed that store. At the end, I was kind of the manager. And it was a really good time. It was like I was at that young age, but a lot of responsibility, thinking about my brothers, their futures, my family to stay together. And I grew up with that responsibility, and was able to at least help my younger brothers to take care of themselves later.
Around the world, you know, being the oldest brother comes with a lot of responsibilities, and Djibouti is no exception. But then, especially with one parent and then no parents, you were on deck early.
Yes. Yeah. Fortunately, we were raised by my auntie, who was my sister, my mother's cousins, who was married to my father after my mother passed away.
Oh, so you had a step family.
Yeah, kind of a step family. And that support, and also the other thing that I cannot forget is kind of the social support that was there, the community support, and people really sympathize, and there is a kind of a social norm to support one another, and people feel the gap.
The village. You were raised by the village.
Right,
as well.
Exactly.
As a wonderful family.
Right.
Extended.
It reminds me, it takes a whole village to raise a child.
Yeah. Would you swing by other people's houses for meals, or did other people come and just say, Muhammad, come here, I want to show you how to do this? Is that kind of how it goes?
It was kind of a neighborhood, and I think people would not even think offering you anything. It's the norm. It's the culture that you go with your friend to their house and eat and serve by their parents as their son or their daughter, and then it goes around, and it's not something that is really structured. It flows, and there is love. There is the generosity of sharing with one another in the small community, small villages, and fortunately, I also grew up most of my time in small towns.
So. Yeah, lots of them, right?
Yeah.
Your dad was in the military,
right.
So you moved a lot.
Right, and people know one another for a while. Like my father's friend, best friend, cousin or neighbor, people were all related to one another.
That's kind of amazing,
it's a
right?
Big family.
As you grow up, no matter where you are, there's a net to catch you.
Yes,
that's
yeah.
What you would
it
want
is,
for any child in the world.
Yeah,
you're a person who's always dug down through all the details to figure out why things happen, and I wondered if you could speak to why migration happens. Having migrated twice yourself, I know you have some thoughts on that.
Yes, I think it affected me. It's part of my life, and it's something that I pay attention to see why is this happening to me and to others who are like me. And I think it goes to back to what happened in Djibouti and how the system could not be at the level of the needs of the people, which means bad governance will always have this kind of results. And you would hear people, I don't believe that, but you hear people who are saying that, oh, we miss the colonial time when French were there. Things were functioning. The government was functioning. Even though there was an oppression, the French who wanted to stay in Djibouti as their own geographic location, like for their own interests. But they were running the government in a way that was functioning. But when it was taken over by our own leaders, it was they failed to create a harmony and focus on something that how they could keep the government function and work for the people. And I think that is the cause of the my personal immigration life. And I think they could have done better. And anywhere, I mean, they could have done in a better way.
Sure. So what would that have looked like? You know, you collect the taxes and then, you know, how could they have done better by the people?
First, I think to establish work ethic, to have meritocratic system, to be accountable to people, to teach their people that they are accountable to them, to not fake the election or rig the election or corrupt people, to accept people to express their opinion, not to feel threatened when people speak up and try to express their opinion, and just to to ask for their rights. So I think it giving people more freedom and being accountable to the people, the work they're doing, the direction the government is taking, should have been like, should let people to be participatory, like to improve the system. Yes. But there was like kind of people took over the power and kind of ran away from people and then oppressed them even more than the colonialists that did.
So painfully ironic that could happen. You needed more trust, that you needed them to trust you, and you needed them to be trustworthy, and you needed less greed.
Yes.
Of power and greed of money.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's a very complex issue. It's it's a political issue, and I
hard to summarize.
But personally, I mean, I'm just talking about my point of view as a person who was affected by immigration and thinking back of what happened and what caused that. I think we were in a better position that we could do better, and I believe in that potential. And
that creates grief, really.
Right.
There's so much loss. You even had to lose your community in which you lived, and
right,
all those wonderful people that caught you when you needed it.
Right. And remember when I was saying the good memories that I had is the beginning, the early years of our independence, that people were happy, they believed in a better government, because the government would be like from the people, and these people would lead us to a better, you know, with care and love and yeah. and justice. But
humans
but,
love yeah, right. justice.
right.
Exactly. We need it. We really need
right.
it.
Yeah.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You are listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Mohammed Ibrahim, who lives in Lewiston and works in Lewiston and Portland as a community organizer for Maine People's Alliance. MPA supports social change through grassroots organizing that reaches 100,000 Mainers annually, regarding a whole wide range of relevant issues of the day. Perhaps Mohammed has even come to your door to encourage you to participate in the democratic process by voting. Who knows? You don't take voting for granted, Mohammed. How do you persuade people who might be on the fence about voting? Give us your best shot at the door here.
Right. right. So it's... I do personally understand the frustration, the fear, the barriers that person can have. And first, it's talking about what brought us here. It's the lack of democracy, lack of freedom.
What brought us here means right. immigrants?
Immigrants, okay. yes. Yeah.
And you're not just talking to immigrants right. at the door, right?
right, that's okay. true. Right, I'm talking
okay.
to everybody.
Okay, like. Just to be clear.
Yeah, so it's... when I'm talking to, so there are two different conversations that I could have at the door. Talking to a new Mainer, coming who have some immigrant background, I would start the conversation like, you know, talking about what brought us here, why we are here. So it's like getting together to a space that we both express the same thing, like a lack of democracy, lack of freedom of expression, lack of justice, lack of all this. So if these were things that really pushed us to leave our own country and our people, why not participating here if we got that opportunity and be part of the social fabric that we live in? We pay taxes, we are part of society. This is this society, and we need to be to fully participate and invest ourselves. And I think that is calling for the ownership of the person. Like, you own your life. You
your citizenship.
You're responsible. Yeah, you're part of this citizenship, and you can improve, you can take part of that. So on the other side, when I'm talking to someone who is not an immigrant person, my conversation is like telling my story and telling them that
I came from a place without voting.
Right.
Don't squander it.
Don't have right to vote, and if you vote, your vote is rigged, is not counted. If you come out and assemble and express your opinions, you stand up for justice, you might go to jail, you might be oppressed, you might be beaten. So I think guarding and protecting the democracy is important. So that is my angle, having a conversation with someone who is not an immigrant.
You talked to me about the American system caring about citizens expressed by the rules we have that we all choose to follow, like carding that goes on for buying alcohol that protects children from having access to alcohol. And we all participate in these rules. Can you say more about your observation of how rules help us express our ideals? I thought that was a particularly poignant angle you had.
Yes. So asking the questions of the role of the government. For example, I was really surprised, and I had so many conversations with other immigrants talking about if you go to a shop and you want to buy cigarettes or alcohol, you're asked to have an ID. What that means for an immigrant, it's really mind-blowing. It's like, well, our government never care about who is consuming these toxics. And having that system, I think it shows how the government is functioning and serving the people. It's part of the service
that the government is working to protect people from harmful substances.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And taking that responsibility, like if you are under 18, you might not be fully responsible of yourself. So there is a system out there who is protecting you if you're doing something that is not good for yourself or destructive. And looking back in Djibouti, you know, we could have that system, but it was not there. Mm-hmm. So that means there is the system is not working to serve the people. It's serving a small group of people, of elites, who are profiting from this.
Yeah, that makes sense. You talked about how ideals aren't always practiced, you know, and that's true in every culture and every religion. You know, we have what we say we are, you know, like a Statue of Liberty there, and then, you know, right. Do we give everyone the right to vote kind of thing. So you were saying that in Islam, there are many idealistic rules that aren't always held to, they don't hold people to account as much as here. You say here, in some ways, the rules that are in place support the Islamic ideals.
Exactly. Yes, it really speaks to them. I mean, if you ask a Muslim person like myself and see what is the ideal behind your belief, that Islamic belief, you would say it's a system that works like the United States works. I mean, people might have some critics, but that's not what I mean. I mean, it's like having a system that is working to a certain level to protect the human being and serve the human being,
yeah.
And protect the dignity of the person, giving a shot at the justice course to have to not be jailed before a court pronounce a uh-huh. sentence. So these ideals are, I think it's not just for Muslim, I think it's from every religion.
Yes.
These are the ideals that people are hoping to have. It's a globalist human being.
Human rights.
Yeah. Feeling.
Yeah, you had said you had worked in domestic violence prevention at one point and as a community cultural broker, and you said in the Quran explains to not harm women.
Right.
And here we have laws in place that support that.
Right, exactly. So yeah. It's like...
It's a win-win.
Of course.
Muslims coming here. Civic engagement is so important for New Mainers. A lot of their success hinges on it. Can you tell me some more about your job with Maine People's Alliance and how you support immigrants with engagement in civic?
Yeah, so
life?
That is a good question. I think when you are thinking about integration, civic engagement is key. Because you want people who are coming here to be engaged, to participate to the system, to improve the system, to take part of the process, instead of limiting them to the services and holding them in that level of being recipients of,
yeah.
or thinking, having that, you know, that perspective of them.
They
so,
belong.
Exactly.
They're not just here to pay taxes.
Exactly.
Work hard.
Right. So they are here to be part of the process. And the civic engagement, the part that I'm working on is to give youth, immigrant, a chance to develop their leadership skills, to create a space that the New Mainers leaders can come together and work together on a vision that they create for their communities, to transition people from where they are to a place that they can be more engaged and participatory in the system.
I really just love that you're doing that. It's very smart to organize. You're bringing all your organizational tools to the job. You know, a lot of times when someone comes, they fall right into their community, whether it's a Congolese community or the Djiboutian community. But you're saying the next step is to plug that community in to the greater civic umbrella.
Yes.
And participate. Mohammed, yes. You are always thinking and working out new ways to welcome and empower people who've been historically disenfranchised. And thank you so much for the community building that you're doing all over Southern Maine, making us all stronger together.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you as my guest today.
Thank you.
And I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Mohammed has selected for us. He was going to play one that he has sung, and it was recorded, but we couldn't get the technology to work. So we're going to go with the original voice. Can you say the name of the song for us?
Adunyeda.
And this is by?
Mohammed Suleiman.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Child, it is